Yeah, it's great to have on the line Scott Gooding. Scott's an author. He's written a very popular book about the keto diet, which is I'll ask him about whether it's a diet or a lifestyle in a minute. But he's followed this up with the keto diet cookbook. So welcome to Travel Writers Radio, Scott.
Thanks very much, Graham. Thanks for having me.
That's a pleasure. We cover wellness on our show: food, wine, travel, and wellness, and all the accoutrement to leading a good life, a nice lifestyle. And we certainly had a lot of interest in this whole issue of low carb, or even more extreme, the keto diet. Can you perhaps just quickly explain to our listeners who may not be familiar what is keto?
Well, it does nestle in nicely with that low-carb diet that you're talking about. And I guess if you refine what that looks like, there's an opportunity right there to get into a metabolic state, which is ketosis.
Right.
So there's a number of different pathways you can get into ketosis. One is by calorie restriction, i.e. fasting, or the other is low-carb. So that low-carb, what does that look like? It's about, depends which literature you're reading, but anywhere between 30 and 50 grams of net carbs a day.
Right. Do you need to be monitoring your blood glucose, for example, fairly closely to succeed at this? And is there any risk in having very, very low blood sugar levels?
You can get pretty affordable blood ketone monitors.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy them online. I think if this is your sort of first go at it, it's probably a good place to start, just so you know it's black and white whether you're in ketosis or not, whether you've got elevated blood ketones.
Right.
I think once you've experienced it, once you've sat in that metabolic state for a number of days or weeks, or you've visited that metabolic state a number of times, then you get a sense, albeit a subjective sense, of what the sensation is like. And so you don't really have to rely then at that point on the blood ketone monitors. But I think if it's your first stab at it, I reckon it's a really good place to start to have that instant feedback whether you are in ketosis or not.
Right. Now, we've spoken to numerous people over the past 4 years on the show who have various theories. Some are scientists and medicos. Some are nutritionists. I don't know if we've spoken to it. Yeah, we have spoken to a couple of doctors. I always get concerned about the word diet, because often that means fad or, you know, fashion. And certainly, there seems to be a little bit of popularity around, not quite Donald Trump popularity maybe, but there is a bit of popularity around this whole idea of keto. How do you see it? Do you see it as a lifestyle scenario, or is it something that's going to come and go? Obviously, you'd like it to stay because you've got a couple of books invested in it.
Yeah, I never want it to go. No, it is. I mean, it's a cliche, but it needs to be a lifestyle. It needs to be something, you know, your health is determined what you do sort of 80, 90% of the time. And I sort of talk about this in my first book on the keto diet, that it's not essential to be in ketosis 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
It's perhaps not practical for many of us to be in ketosis 24/7. But if you sort of have a 40,000 foot view perspective of what your diet should look like, it should tick a number of boxes, and then that becomes your lifestyle. So it should be, to me, you should be aiming to have foods that are low inflammatory, because it's inflammation that is the root cause or the cornerstone to health and disease. So what I'm trying to say is that it's not the be-all and end-all, the pinnacle, the end game might not necessarily be ketosis. But if you're heading in that direction and you're embracing foods that are low inflammatory, you're embracing live foods — this is a really important piece of the puzzle — live foods in preference over non-live foods.
What's,
non-live,
the, Live food so sounds like catching a mouse, like a cat catching a mouse. What do you mean?
Well, a live food is something that's, you know, grown, you know, could be a berry, it could be broccoli, it could be a fish, it could be a cow.
Right.
Versus a non-live food, in my mind, is something like bread or pasta or, processed. You know, processed, yes.
Yeah,
okay. I guess there's two different ways to look at it, right. But I think we're talking about the same thing. So, to me, there's a number of benefits and therapeutic properties that come as a result of ketosis, but it's not the be-all and end-all. And so once it's not the be-all and end-all, you reduce the stress and the tension or the risk of failure that you didn't get there. But if you just step down a little bit and you go, okay, well, what's really important for long-term health? What's really important for longevity? And that's minimizing inflammation. Right. And that's kind of what my first book is all about. What does the lifestyle look like that encourages a low inflammatory environment in your body? Mm. What are the dietary preferences? What are the lifestyle choices? See, that to me is probably more important. And I know it sounds counterintuitive because I've written two books on ketosis, but I think lowering inflammation is the most important thing that we can do to promote health, and ketosis is a part of that. So it's a tool.
What are the inflammatory foods you're referring to? You're talking about starches and things like that.
I guess gluten is probably the most common and recognised food that promotes inflammation.
Right.
You know, we could probably, they're very common. So, you know, gluten,
all the
grains,
white stuff, is it?
Lots of the white stuff, sugar, dairy. Right. I mean, dairy's not, it's not all created equally. Some's better than others. And this is another thing that I talk about in the first book, that I don't really want to talk about the foods that are pro-inflammatory. Let's celebrate, let's sing about, let's embrace the foods that are going to promote a healthy person. So I don't want to demonize certain food groups, because that runs the risk of polarizing people and setting people up for failure. Let's talk about all these foods over here that promote health, promote longevity. But the really important thing is not just to talk about them, but how do you actually encourage people to get excited about being in the kitchen and cooking at home with real food and love? Mm. That's kind of where I've been sitting in the last couple of years, is that we all know that broccoli is healthy. We all know that it has a number of vitamins and a number of minerals, and it's going to promote health. But unless it's treated in the right way, you're not going to be excited about eating it.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So that's kind of where, and it's a bit warm and fuzzy and it's very subjective, but that's kind of where I'm sitting in the last year and a half, 2 years. I've realized that that's where the gold is. If you can, I mean, not in a monetary financial sense, but more, if we can get people back in their kitchen cooking with real food and love, embracing veggies, treating veggies in the right way. To me, veggies are the hero of the plate. We should almost marginalize protein, particularly in Australia. We sort of celebrate the protein, but we need to kind of, broadly speaking, reduce the protein intake and celebrate above ground veggies. But we need to get excited about that. And you only do that if you treat it in a certain way. And that could be cooking in a certain way, or adding certain herbs and spices or certain fats to the veg, or to make it sing, to make it the hero, to make it enticing, alluring, sexy, all those things that, you know, make you come back to the kitchen time and time again.
Mm. Now, you describe yourself as a passionate health coach and personal trainer. You're not medically trained, Scott?
No, I'm not. I studied exercise science at uni, and then since 2005, I've sort of sat in the fitness and health industry. But I don't have a medical background.
So do you come to this from seeing success from the people you've been training, or what, how did you get to this stage?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I guess a bit of that. So, but before I could sort of speak with as much passion as I do, I have to go back to like 2005. So I injured my back in 2005. And for about 7 years, I lived in this world of inflammation, pain, discomfort, which obviously affected my mood. I became quite a cranky version of myself. And I sort of felt like I'd checked out of life, really, for 7 years. And so having an exercise science background and knowing my injury was a mechanical injury, I sought to rehab myself in a mechanical way. So chiro, osteo, physio, all those modalities. I tried several times and lots of practitioners within each modality. After 7 years, so in the eighth year, I was like, I wasn't seeing much sort of progress. And so I thought there's got to be more to it. I'm not one to kind of rest on my laurels. I was like, I was sort of hell bent on finding a better solution for myself. And so I started reading around foods that were pro-inflammatory, foods that were anti-inflammatory. And at this point, I thought to myself, well, I've got nothing else to lose. There might be some value in this. There might be some merit. So I systematically started to reduce the foods that were pro-inflammatory and at the same time embrace more foods that were anti-inflammatory. And then over, not days, but certainly weeks and definitely months, I gave my body, this is my interpretation, and it's sort of backed up with the research that I've read on this subject, that it just gave my back the bandwidth it needed, because it wasn't dealing with the inflammation, the systemic inflammation. It gave my body the bandwidth it needed to heal itself.
Right.
Our body is sort of craving homeostasis. Its MO is survival. So if you give it the right input, it will endeavor to do that.
Okay.
And so in my case, yeah, over months, my back pain severity reduced, the frequency of back spasms and flare-ups reduced, to the point now, you know, I've been pain-free for, I don't know, 5 years now, okay. 6 years.
Oh, well, that's a good story.
And so I've sort of, I guess, been my own case study, and it gave me the understanding of the importance and potency of real food and how real food can be therapeutic, medicinal. But it's got to, first and foremost, it's got to be delicious.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I'm sitting. I'm like, well, okay, I've understood that real food is therapeutic. I've understood that it's medicinal. It can help a multitude of conditions. For me, it was chronic back pain. But how do we get people excited about eating broccoli? How do we get people excited about eating, you know, fill in the blank? And that comes down to a number of things, but that's kind of where I've been sitting.
Okay. Oh, well, I can accept that. Interestingly, I flick the book open and I see a whole lot of protein, but it looks pretty bloody good to me too. You know, rump steak with anchovy butter and chili salt scotch fillet with chimichurri. So, and the photos are great. So I think this probably would, if someone picked it up in a bookshop, they'd probably go, wow, this doesn't look like diet food.
Yeah. Sorry to cut you off, Grant. No. Like, to me, it's not diet food. It's food that you would see in every supermarket aisle. There's no sense in promoting a diet that isn't accessible to myself in Sydney and someone in rural Australia. It has to be familiar items. It has to be comforting. It has to be easy, maybe quick, maybe on a budget. So there's a number of thought processes that you go through in first cookbook design or recipe sort of design. Like, there's a number of steps and criteria that has to be hit before you go, okay, well, let's put that recipe in, because it hits those requirements.
Okay. Well, Scott, the line started to break up a little bit, but thank you very much for talking to us. I've enjoyed chatting with you and having a look through the recipe book. It certainly does look inspiring. So, Scott Gooding, it's published by Hachette, H-A-C-H-E-T-T-E, or in all good bookshops, I assume, Scott?
It is, yes. Online, Booktopia, Bookworld, iTunes, but yeah, all your high Fantastic. Street bookstores too.
All right. Scott Gooding, thanks very much for your time. Thanks for being on Travel Writers Radio.
Thanks for having me, Graham.
Pleasure.